If 2020 was a year to be forgotten, Reading FC made the first blow in making 2021 one to remember with a Lucas Shaw-inspired 2-1 win at Huddersfield, ensuring a bit of Christmas cheer lasted into the January chill. Welcome to the Tarnhurst End Podcast, episode 246, with your host, Mark Mayo, joining you back after our customary holiday break, although obviously going and seeing friends and family not quite too high on the agenda. With me this afternoon is Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal, editor of the Tarnhurst End. How's it going, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Bit confused by these strange times we're in, but we've got some good football to kind of keep us distracted during it, so long may it continue.
And Ben Thomas joins us as well. How's it going?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm not too bad, all things considered. I think that, you know, the one constant is that you give Lucas Jow the ball and he'll score goals. So at least we've got that kind of in the locker at the moment, which is good, apart from everything else.
Absolutely. And we're filming this, or recording this, should I say, at a time when certain things are being announced about certain national measures. And as far as I'm aware, we're not going to have to at some point during this podcast say the football has been cancelled. But if that happens, then you'll know it by now. So that'll be a fun little bit of foreboding to happen upon us. But before we get into the recap then and talk about the football that has happened over the last few weeks, a big thank you over this period, difficult period for a lot of people, to be putting their hands in their pockets and helping us out on the Patreon. Massive thank you, as always, to people who help us out with the little bits to help us improve our technology and to improve our software and everything like that that goes into creating the website and the show and the YouTube channel as well. And a big thanks again, as always, to ZCZ Films, our sponsor, as we go into another new year of, well, you know, all the others bits that you can imagine. So let's talk about the football that's happened in the last couple of weeks when we've been off. And, well, it's been all right.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Okay, let's fast rewind our minds back to Boxing Day when Reading were hosting Luton at the Mad Stad, and it was a 2-1 win for Reading. A bit of a fast start. Tom McIntyre popping up in the 9th minute with his first professional goal. Lovely bit of technique to take it on the finish from a corner routine. Alpha Semedo then popping up with a smooth finish, working it with Sam Baldock for the second. Bit of a turgid second half, and Raphael with a bit of an error that we'll get on to talk about in a bit. But Sim, for, you know, a game that I think after a couple of defeats, Reading it came into this one, a little bit of uncertainty amongst the fan base. This is the sort of game that, with all due respect to Luton, if you want to get promoted, you want to be winning these sorts of games. And to come into it and Reading be so convincing in the first half was a real breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it was definitely a banana skin, and it was the kind of game where I think in the last couple of years, Reading may well have lost it, or may well have drawn it, or certainly not got the job done properly. But it's what we did on the day. We didn't have to be too flashy about it. It was a pretty scrappy game throughout the entire match, to be honest. But we got two good goals in the first half. The corner routine was very bright, and it shows the work that's been put on the training ground to make those moves come off. And then it was a really good open play goal from Baldock and Semedo. Certainly not something you would have associated with either of them, considering the lack of attacking impact they've had this season. But it was a really good sign for them both to come up with a really nice move, and obviously Semedo capping it off. Second half, just it felt comfortable, to be honest. We didn't really have that much to worry about, and Luton didn't really give us too much to think about in the second half. Obviously a bad mistake from Raphael, but at the end of the day, we got the job done. We got the points coming, and you look at where we are in the table at the minute. I think we're still fourth at the minute. It's because we were able to grind out results like that, getting the win against Luton, and obviously grinding out a win against QPR a couple of weeks ago as well. Because we were able to get results in that kind of fashion, it's not pretty. It's not particularly free-flowing or easy on the eye. But to be able to get that done when we had injuries at the same time is really encouraging. It says a lot about the organisation and the character and the spirit of this side.
Well, because of the injuries over the Christmas period, we did see a lot of Sam Baldock, or a lot more Sam Baldock than perhaps we thought about. And Ben, this was a good opportunity to to really get a gauge on where he is at the moment. We know he's a championship experienced striker. We, you know, have a pretty good gauge on him as a player. And I suppose with this Semedo goal, we really saw the best of Sam Baldock, is that he's not a player you really want to be playing up front on his own. He's a support striker with a partner alongside him. And that makes it difficult when Paunovic pretty much always plays one up front. And perhaps, you know, you'd perhaps rather Baldock and Semedo as well to be a squad option. But it's nice to see that when they are brought into the team, you know, it maybe doesn't happen as much as it happens for Lucas Shaw and Yaku Mate, but for them to pull it off every now and again, it's really important that that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from my point of view, you need players like Sam Baldock in your squad if you're going to, you know, challenge for promotion, because a lot of the stuff that he does on the ball, the kind of the verbal encouragement, the pats on the back, the kind of G'ing people up, the, you know, applauding people for trying to knock balls through to him is absolutely vital for confidence. And, you know, handshakes and backslaps don't win games, but it like you said, it just shows the kind of the mentality and the character and the desire to win. He is not gonna to be the player that we want him to be, because he's not, you know, Lucas Jowell, he's not an out and out goal scorer really, and it is frustrating, and that's the only thing that in my mind at the moment kind of lets Paunovic down, because he it's almost like he's stitching Baldock up a little bit when he plays in. And I know that he comes in for a kind of a lot of stuff on Twitter from fans, which I think is unfair really. I think, you know, generally the Luton game, as Sim said, was a really good, you know, positive 3 points, because we had two players on the score sheet that have kind of gone under the radar really this year. I think with Semedo, he's a very, very good player and he's very confident in what he does. But again, the kind of positions that we've asked him to play in aren't, you know, what he would normally play. So, you know, going back to him and Baldock, I think when they do come on and they do play, there is a massive willingness to do well for the team, knowing that full well that probably when we've got other players back, they'll be straight back on the bench or worse. So, you know, I think Baldock is very valuable in a lot of respects, but you know, I just wish he was given the support and playing off someone else, because he's very, very energetic, and he'd probably be, you know, as a championship defender, very, very irritating to play against. You know, what the future holds for him beyond the season, I would be very surprised if he stayed at the club. But, you know, this was a player that was down and out sort of, you know, this time last year. So anything can happen at the club at the moment. But I would be surprised if he is here next season.
Yeah, I think ultimately for now we have to be, you know, I think the thing we have to be realistic as to what we get. I know for me and Sim, it's occasionally something that when we do talk about the player ratings that we do for the Tyler Stend on our Facebook message, kind of think, well, is he a six? Is he a five? You can say, oh, six, he's tried hard, but then he's got no service. But then is he a service striker? It is a difficult one that we do often discuss him. And I suppose at the end of the day, what we kind of have to be thinking now is if Sam Baldock comes on for you in a playoff final or playoff semi-final with 15 minutes to go and Reading need a goal, are you happy with that as an option, or at the very least comfortable with it?
Baldock coming on in search of when Reading are in search of goal isn't for me a good option, but he is a good option when you're 1-0 up and you're trying to see a game out. You saw in the Huddersfield game a couple of days ago that you can throw him on and he'll make himself a nuisance in the final third. He'll really kind of put himself about and he'll really harry defenders and give you that kind of that different option. Obviously can't hold the ball up in the same way that Zhao can, but he can really kind of be that kind of presence in the final third and really, really work hard and really run his socks off. And that does pay dividends in games like the Huddersfield game that we had. And it's, as Ben said, he's a good option to have in the squad.
Another player that was subject to a bit of debate was going into that period. And if we were doing this podcast after the Luton game, we'd have been talking about Raphael and whether we were going to keep him in the team or whether it was Luke Southwood's time. And it was a subject, so I think you wrote about it, Sim, on the Tyler Stand, and he didn't do very well for the Luton goal at the end of the game, and it was a clean sheet ruin, but obviously he didn't drop any points from it. Reading then go to Swansea a couple of days later. Really difficult game as we go into that one. You know, as I say, the debate as to whether to drop him or not was kind of going on all the way. I mean, I've said before on this podcast, he's not a player that I would drop lightly. So I think it's I wouldn't have taking him out of the game for the Swansea game. Obviously, with foresight, no one would have, because he produced a fantastic performance in the 0-0 draw at the Liberty. And Sim, I wonder, because I know you're saying about potentially dropping him for Southwood, is it, you know, as a scenario to be in for a team, do you think that there is going to be a point where maybe Paunovic says that Raphael should be taken out? Or do you think that ultimately the fact that he has made these errors and keeps being picked means that effectively Raphael, unless he gets injured, is going to be our number one for the league for, you know, for right or wrong for the rest of the season?
Yeah, my suspicion is that he's going to keep Raphael in come what may, basically. And to an extent, that's understandable. I mean, he's a lot more experienced. He's got a lot more know-how than Southwood has. It's not like Southwood has got a decent amount of championship experience behind him and can come in and immediately make an impact. There is going to be a bedding in period. But I guess when you're in the hunt for promotion and you're trying to stay in the playoffs, you do think that, or rather Paunovic thinks that, that Raphael is the more reliable option. But the worry for me is that he can have a good run of form and then all of a sudden he'll make a mistake like he did against Brentford, and then that seems to knock his confidence. Then in the next game he'll make another mistake, and he kind of seems to go between the two states, and it's not that he's able to decisively get out of that mindset. He's not able to decisively stop making errors, because we saw him make errors a couple of times early on in the season. I think it was Coventry, Bournemouth, kind of around that period. And for him to make those mistakes and then get a good amount of better form after that, and then to start making mistakes later on after that, to me shows there's just something in the back of his mind that isn't quite there, whether it's focus or concentration or anything like that. It's a problem that needs to be solved. And obviously in the longer term, there's the issue of who Reading's goalkeeper is going to be next season and the season after that. Southwood's contract is up in the summer, so we do have to have an eye on that, and it's something for Paunovic to consider.
Yeah, I think the thing is with Southwood is you would presume that he will get the run out against Luton on the weekend, presuming that game goes ahead. More on that later. But the thing is for me, Ben, I think with the goalkeeper situation is it's difficult to... It depends when you... If you find yourself in a situation where both goalkeepers are making errors, it's obviously hard to predict that, but it just means you keep changing them over or whatever. I think we've had before, I think, when Vito Minoni was in goal and, you know, we took him out, and then I think we put Sam Walgren for a bit and it wasn't much better. And I think ultimately, you know, for, as fans, we can probably take this as a bit of a good thing that we have got someone like Southwood. Yes, we don't really know how good he is at this level, but we're pretty comfortable with the idea that he would come in and replace someone like Raphael, who is, as we saw against Swansea, on his day, a top-class keeper. So I suppose it's a good position to be in, really, that if Raphael does continue to make errors and we take him out, we're not too worried about bringing Southwood in.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think Rafa's performance against Swansea was all down to Sim, really. I think he just read the article and went, no, I'm not having that. You know, I'm going to show this guy what I'm all about, really. But, you know, it's very, very difficult when I look at Raphael, because... You know, we have been, even in our darkest times, we've been blessed with very good goalkeepers at their core. You know, even about Habsi, even about Federici. And we've had a couple of years of transition. But for me, you know, unless we sell or someone comes in for Raphael with a bid, which doesn't look likely at the moment, he has to start. My perception of it, and I completely understand where Sim was with his article, and I kind of agreed with a lot of points that he made, but I think Raphael's tired. I think if you consider how much football that he's played and, you know, the amount of points that he's effectively won us, saved us, however you want to term it, I think he's got fatigue. You look at some of his distribution, which was phenomenal last year, absolutely phenomenal. It's not been as good this year. And those little things as a goalkeeper, I would imagine, will start to creep into your back of your mind and kind of give you doubts. For me, if I was going to make the change as Pauno, I would have taken Raphael out for the Luton game at home and just said to Southwood, you just crack on. And if he'd done well, you know, you keep him in the Swansea game and so on and move from there. I don't think, based on the magnitude of the game, which, if we're all honest, and I know we'll talk about later on, with the Swansea game was just kind of almost damage limitation / let's get out of there with at least something. Cannot for one minute imagine Paunovic sticking Southwood in for a game of that magnitude. I really couldn't. So for me, I feel like maybe Southwood has probably missed his opportunity for the time being. And I feel like Raphael would have to be absolutely catastrophic now over a period of time to be taken out, because on his day, he is a fantastic goalkeeper, everything about him, organisation, communication, you know, the basic shot stopping, things like that. But I think he just looks tired. I really do. And I think he probably would have benefited over Christmas of just having a little break out the team and just kind of observing and kind of restocking, really. But that hasn't happened. So I would, you know, probably agree with the fact that he will keep in the goal for the foreseeable future.
Well, I think it's probably worth at this point kind of adding on another sense of the tiredness that a player like Raphael might be having in being in a foreign country. You know, I don't know whether he has how much family he has around him, for instance. Obviously, he's not been able to go home, or, you know, to celebrate a holiday period in ways that he's used to, and all these sorts of things that are different for him at the moment. You can just imagine, you know, you can just, without presuming too much, you can get a glimpse of the sort of different sense of when players go home from training and everything like that, particularly players from abroad at the moment, and how that, you know, how difficult that might be and how much that might be just little effects here and there on their form. And you know, maybe that is happening with Raphael. But nonetheless, as we said, it was a brilliant performance against Swansea. 0-0 draw, Reading getting out of that with something that I think ultimately it was a 0-0 draw that Reading held on for to an extent, but it wasn't a complete backs against the wall. You know, Reading were a decent team in possession in that game, had a couple of chances themselves. There's one that Semedo got into the D and had a brilliant chance just to roll it off to Elise, and he didn't do that. And Elise, you know, probably gets on target if he does that. But looking at the shots, Swansea only had three more shots than Reading. You know, they won the possession game about 58% to 42%, but it's not, you know, it wasn't like Reading were completely battered in that game. And ultimately, I think, Sim, the thing that I took away from this was that going away from home and getting these points is integral to a playoff push or promotion push. Reading couldn't do it against Coventry. They couldn't do it against Bournemouth. Yes, they could do it against Middlesbrough and Millwall. So they have done it previously this season. But to be able to go and do it again against Swansea, it's an invaluable sort of couple of points to take off that team as much as to take one home yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. To keep ourselves ticking over and just to keep us in contention with Swansea and other teams. And you could imagine that if we had lost that, it would have been a big hit to confidence. Obviously, we've been able to pick up a few results, having lost to Brentford and to Norwich. But it's just about keeping yourself in contention and keeping that point tally ticking over. And it could well be that we miss out on the playoffs by a point, or get in by a point, or anything, and they all count at the end of the season.
And then let's round off the recap then by talking about the 2-1 win at Huddersfield. This, I mean, if you want to consider the Colchester game a Pavlovich game or a game this season or whatever, then you can. But otherwise, aside from that game, it is the first win of the season from behind for Reading, which was particularly important, I think. A lot of Reading's win this season have come with a clean sheet. So to do it in a different way is always nice, to keep adding different ways and knowing how to win. Huddersfield had won 5 in a row at home going into this one. It's the third time that Reading have opened their calendar year with an away win in a row. So the last 3 times that Reading have played away to open a calendar year, they have won. Bristol City in 2017 before this, went 2-0 down. Fulham in 2020, a big, anyone listening to the Christmas podcast will remember us eulogising about that day. And Ben, this was just a really nice opportunity that Reading almost looked like they'd given away in the first 5 minutes with Fraser Campbell scoring. But Lucas Shaw, back from injury, back in the lineup, you know, thrown straight in there with John Swift behind him and Aluko and Ajaria starting as well. It was just the 2 goals that he scored were very different goals, and it just showed what an amazing player he is at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think we've ever doubted his quality. I think we've obviously had, you know, conversations and thoughts around his conditioning and his physical shape. But, you know, realistically, the first, obviously the 2 goals are very, very different. And I think he at the moment is the difference between what we are, what we haven't had. The first goal, just sheer determination to get there. Terrible defending, if I'm honest, you know, just clear your lines from that one. But, you know, the guy didn't do that. And he was in there and the finish was fantastic from that angle. Second one, obviously, was just different level. I mean, you know, we've got a habit of scoring fantastic goals this year, and that will add to the collection. But yeah, it, as I said to you before we started this, it was a game that I feel we would have lost last year, same as the Swansea game. So that's 4 points that we wouldn't have had this time last year. And it is the sheer determination of all those players to just keep going and to grind it out. You know, obviously Jao's going to take the plaudits and rightly so, but there were so many other positives in that game. You know, Aluko had a decent game again, gone under the radar. You know, McIntyre was very, very good. You know, Swift coming back in and playing in that role that personally I love to see him in. You know, great, great position for him to be in. So, yeah, Huddersfield weren't awful by any stretch of imagination, but we had, you know, the cutting edge to finish the game off. And it's very, very pleasing that we're still in the playoff contention, having had that really major dip, and we're going to continue to improve and continue to push on, hopefully. So, yeah, great 3 points. Really, really good to get that done. And obviously now we've got a bit of a gap in between games where we can sort of get those players back and recover a little bit.
Yeah, it is important to remember that, you know, Liam Moore, Yakimese and others weren't available for any of these Christmas fixtures. So to have Zhao back and, as you say, Swift was, you know, it can't be underestimated that the boost of kind of getting through games without them and then being able to pull out the points when they do return, it is a clear path to glory, really, if Reading can keep it up. So that's 7 from 9 over the Christmas period then. I think we're all very happy with that. Reading a fifth, 3 points clear of sixth, 3 points behind second. Bournemouth play their game in hand in midweek. But, otherwise, most teams around Reading have played a game less due to the various postponements and everything that Reading have so far avoided. So for now, I think it's just just a case of being happy with what Reading have. We got the FA Cup coming up on the weekend. We'll talk about that a bit later in the show. And Reading fans can just be happy with how they're sat at the moment. And Veljko Paunović can certainly be very happy with his Christmas period's work. So let's hear from him now before we go on into the mailbag.
In many, many times challenged to fight our mentality or our previous mentality, which we are going to leave behind us right now, because now we have a completely different mindset. We know we can win. We know we can come back from starting the game going behind very early in the game, which we're not happy about. It's something to address. But right now we have to look at all the positives and the momentum that we're building in the last 3 games, 7 points, very good performance, recovering players from injuries and becoming the team that we were at the beginning of the season.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Valdemar Janajak starts us off then with the question, is Lucas Shaw the best Reading striker of the millennium? Better than Kermigan, Roberts, Kitson, Doyle, Lisa, Long? I mean, it's difficult. I think the question that I've asked myself about Lucas Shaw is, what can he possibly add to his game? Because, you know, he's got the pace, the power, he's got the finishing, he's got the ability to hold off defenders, he's got the ability to bring others into play, he can lay a good pass on. You look at those other players, and the players who probably had everything from that, I'll probably say Kitson, Doyle, had pretty much everything. Doyle, you know, had the ballsiness and the sort of battering ram attitude. Perhaps Roberts had the intelligence, Kermigan, the technique. I'd probably say the best striker out of all those on his day, probably Dave Kitson for me. Sim, I don't know who you would say out of those, whether Lucas Shaw, what you maybe would add to his game that he perhaps doesn't have at the moment.
It's a good question. It's a bit odd to say, considering how many goals he scored this season, but maybe consistency, because there was a period earlier on in the season, not a huge problem, where he just seemed to be a little bit quieter in games. Obviously, he's been really good at kind of getting other players into the game, being able to bring others into the play higher up the pitch. There's been a few games where he's not been quite as good at that, and I just like to see him really kind of get that out week in, week out, regardless of how well other players around him are playing. But when you look at the sheer range of things that he's able to do on a pitch, whether it's scoring from close range or scoring from long range, being able to bully a defender physically or get past them with some really good movement, he's really got a great combination of basically everything. And that's a nightmare for a defender, because they just don't know how to mark him. When he's able to kind of drop off a little bit, find a bit of space outside the box and whack the ball into the net 1 minute, or the other minute bully a defender and get in behind, how do you prepare for that? How do you kind of work out how to deal with that? And it's great for obviously for him, for being able to have such a good threat in the team, but you look at just how much of a boost it gives to everyone else around the club, whether it's other players in the side or fans following the team. And he's kind of a talisman as well as a really good player, and you don't get players around like that very often for Reading.
No, absolutely. And there were a couple of photos that we shared on the Tarlas Den Twitter over Christmas of him, you know, with his Christmas tree and his glass of bubbly, and in the club merchandise with the Santa hat on and the sunglasses and that sort of stuff. And you realise he's just quite a cool dude as well, which maybe not all of those strikers that Voldemar listed had quite as much that, you know, had that vibe nailed down quite as well. And I know what you mean by consistency, because there was that game, as an example game of this, there was the one against Wickham earlier in the season where he pops up with the winner, but having pretty much done nothing for 60 minutes. And that is difficult for a striker to be able to do that sort of 90-minute game. Perhaps it's a fitness thing. You know, as Kevin Doyle out of that list would give you 90 minutes of pure action. Perhaps Lucas Shaw doesn't have that at the moment. Ben, I don't know if there's anything you'd add on in terms of which strikers perhaps he's most similar to out of that list.
It is a great question. It really is. I think in terms of hold-up play, Zhao is second to none on that list. I mean, he, you know, without being arrogant and disrespectful to Swansea, for me, if he played against Swansea, I thought like we would have won that game, because we were just missing that hold-up player up front, and he would have brought other players into the mix had he been on the pitch. If he's still doing this time next year, yeah, then he can have it 100%. But for me, and I'll always talk about him, but, you know, Jason Roberts, the impact that he had for me, single-handedly got the team promoted that year. You know, the partnership he had with, you know, Kebe knocking the balls in and him, you know, scoring the goals, and just the kind of aura behind that sign-in was absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, you're looking at value for money, and you've got to put Doyle and Kitts at the very top of that list. You know, what did we pay for Zhao? 5 million, something like that, plus add-ons. So that's a lot of money for a club that has got no money. And I think when he signed, I was a bit like, God, where is this money coming from for effectively a kind of a journeyman in the lower league? So, you know, I think Zhao is settling down, but he has got to stay fit. And he has got to stay kind of level-headed and just kind of connecting with the rest of the team. I haven't really answered that question at all, if I to be honest, but it is very, very difficult, very difficult. They've all got different qualities, and it's, you know, last time we talked about this team and the 106 team, it's a different game, I think, as Sim said all those weeks ago, and he's right, because they've all got different qualities. So at the moment, for me, the answer would be no, he's not the best striker of this century, but if he's still doing this time next year, then yeah, 100% it will be him.
Yeah, longevity is the key, and I'm certainly very happy for him to prove us on that point and go and put together, you know, the sort of 3 or 4 years that Kitts and Doyle put together. Obviously, Kerman and Roberts were perhaps more of a one-season thing. Leiter did it over a couple. Long did it over a couple. So, yeah, that's the target now for Lucas Shaw, isn't it, to back up this period of form and just keep it going. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it, just that he can he gets that role now for the rest of the season and beyond, and hopefully can keep showing what he can be doing. And Evan asks, if everyone is fit, what is our best 11? Now, I'm going to save us some time on this and presume that we're all going to put Raphael in goal. We're all going to put Rinomota and Laurent as the centre mids, with Morrison, Moore, Richards. Right back's a bit of a question. In the attack, obviously, we're going to have Lucas Shaw, and after the conversation we've just had, I should assume so. Then you kind of got a few question marks. I'm going to throw Mate, Swift and Ajaria as that along that. Actually, no, I've forgotten Elise, haven't I? Elise, Swift and Ajaria. Mate off the bench is what I'm going to do. A bit off the hop, on the hop here, as you can tell. But yeah, that's why it's a difficult question. Right back, I'll go Yeardon. Sim, as I've just attested, it's a bit of a difficult one to fit everyone in. So are you gonna be doing it for the best 11 at the moment?
Yeah, it's really tricky finding a three to go behind Zhao, isn't it? Because you're kind of, I want to put Ajaria on the left. I don't think there's any kind of better option there. And then being able to choose between Swift and Elise as your number 10 is is an embarrassment of riches, really. It's something that I think I said on Saturday, being able to take off last season's, for me, player of the season, Swift, in terms of his really great creative play last season, being able to replace him with Michael Elise, who's our best creative player this season, really shows how much quality we have going forwards at the minute. To push myself for an answer on this, I think I'm going to go with Elise as number 10 and then Mate on the right. And I've just kind of bigged up Swift and then said I'm not going to start him. But for me, Elise is our sharpest, best all-round number 10. And Mate just adds a lot of what other players don't offer, to be honest, in this side. That ability to get in behind, that strength and that ability to essentially act as another striker when you've got Jao kind of dropping off and you want someone running beyond, and Mate's really good at making those penetrative runs. Right back, and go with Yeardom, same as you. I like Holmes as a more of a defensive option. I like Estevez as more of a kind of a dynamic option, but Yeardom seems to have kind of both of them essentially. He's got a bit more experience, he's got some dynamism on the ball, and he really gives us that kind of that energy on the right that we've really missed without sacrificing too much defensive solidity. So that's my 11 to round off yours.
Yeah, well, I think if Mate could prove himself on the left wing, I think I'd have him there and then Elise on the right. But it's difficult. I think, Ben, are you going to, any advances on what we've said?
Well, I put Southwood in goal straight away. No, I wouldn't do that. I'd leave Rafa in. It's very, very difficult. Swift for me starts in any Reading team. So Swift is going straight in. Work rate and everything else, I'd probably go Mate. And that's the worst in terms of picking those three behind, because I think we're all agreed, you know, every Reading fan's agreed now that 4-2-3-1 is what we're doing. That's it. That's our makeup now. Based on this season, I just don't think Ajaro has been as consistent as he probably should be, really. You know, that's hard work. I mean, obviously I'm going to get slated for leaving Elise out, but I based on the current situation surrounding him and the hype surrounding him, I would be very surprised if he continues to stay with us. So Swift is going in my team, full stop. Then the question marks around Mate, Ajaro and Elise, and trying to pick two out of those, really. If I can kind of shift Elise around a little bit, then I can get him in. Right back is the trickiest one for me when I kind of wrote this down earlier. I think Holmes has done enough to stay there when Yeardom is fit. I get what Sim's saying about, you know, the more defensive option, but with Yeardom, he just has not proved kind of being able to be consistently fit. And for me at the moment, it's, you know, when all the pieces are there, it's kind of Holmes to lose, really. So yeah, a couple of question marks, but I think the spine of the team tends to pick itself. It's just, you know, the three behind Jao are the biggest issue, which is incredible. When we would, you know, if we'd had this conversation this time last year, we wouldn't believe we'd be saying this. But, you know, how blessed are we to be in a position where we got, you know, those four players to choose from, really.
Yeah, just need to get them all fit, really. Now, don't be, that's the key to getting the best out of this team, perhaps. Peter asking, now that we're out of the EU and the new immigration rules are applicable, how will this affect the January and future transfer windows? We seem to be big on buying players from Portugal at the moment, so will this make it difficult to bring these players in? Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is that we're kind of big on being linked to players from Portugal. I think other than Estevez, we haven't actually got anyone, as far as I'm aware. So I don't think, you know, whether that's an actual strategy or just a reporting strategy, I don't know. But in terms of how it's going to affect this window, I mean, there's a kind of a little question mark over that. I think, you know, time will tell. But in terms of the future transfer windows, again, it's just a big, for me, it's just a big old question mark. You can go through and you can read all the rules. I know that there's stuff, you know, it's been covered quite extensively by a lot of people, as to how the point systems and work permits are going to work. Obviously, work permits are going to have to apply to EU players now as well as non-EU players. Reading have signed, you know, a lot of young EU players over the years and done quite well out of it, and also any players that have links to the EU. And ultimately, I think for now as fans, we kind of need to see the thing in practice rather than kind of judge off the theory of it at the moment, because it's going to turn out to be a lot of cases of what is deemed you know, by the FA or the government or whoever's in charge of it, as to players being worthy of a work permit. If they're quite loose with those rules and they hand out quite a lot, then it won't make a big difference. But if they're very tight, which I don't suspect they'll be, just my own personal hunch, then things will change a lot. But as I say, it's kind of, we need to see the proof in the pudding as to how these systems work, rather than judging them right at the moment as to how they affect Reading, then, you know, time will tell. Speaking of which, Alistair, to round off the mailbag, asking, how do we have to strengthen, where do we have to strengthen in January? In a sentence, Sim, what are you going to say for that?
It's a bit of a tricky one. I can't really get it down to a sentence, to be honest. I don't want us to kind of go out and bring in too many players. I know there's the temptation to kind of try and cover for anyone who might get injured or might not get injured, but it's difficult to bring in players and strengthen the squad, but then without kind of unbalancing it or kind of damaging the cohesion and the kind of the sense of a lean focused squad that we've had all this season. So I'd like a winger or a wide forward, but I don't want us to kind of splash the cash and go out and get kind of four or five new players kind of thing.
And Ben, same question for you then. Where's the Reading strength in January?
For me, it's got to be the strikers. I think obviously we've had a serious issue and been really hit with the fact that obviously Puskas has been injured and Zhao's been on and off, and then, you know, leaving Baldock and at one point, you know, playing Semedo up front against Norwich. So although he did very, very well, it's not ideal. I do agree with Sim and the fact that, you know, you don't want to start throwing money at it for no reason. I feel like this year is slightly different, though, because it won't be hard to sell the club at all to players. You know, quite the opposite to previous years. I think the problem will be kind of the wages element of it and also the game time, because any players that are looking to come in and kind of play regularly, I don't see that happening unless we get a major long-term injury again. You know, we have got a lot of strength and depth in some areas. But, you know, it's not going to be as clear-cut as someone coming in and going, right, that's your position, off you go and crack on. So I think it's going to be an interesting month, but I think it's going to be more about, you know, who we keep hold of and who we're able to keep together as a squad rather than who's coming in. No doubt they will strengthen and they will bring players in, but for me personally, it's got to be strikers.
Yes, well, that will certainly, time will certainly tell on that one, and keep your eye across the Tarnlast End, Twitter and Facebook and the website for the next few weeks as we update you on what's going on in the January transfer window. And well, let's continue talking about it, shall we? Because there's a lot to get through and we'll be doing that now in News Bites.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Thank you, as ever, to people who have got in touch for the mailbag. You can do so on the Facebook and the Twitter, and also the tarnlastend@gmail.com for all your questions to the podcast and to the website. Any, you know, reviews, any thoughts that you think might improve the show, any things that really, really annoy you that I do, you know, do get in touch. And well, I'll try and fix it, I swear. So let's talk about some news bites now. Before we get into transfer window, just a little bit on Josh Lovant. He's been named the Tarnlast End's Player of the Month for December. Congratulations to Josh. I think that's his first award of the season, with Tom Holmes coming in second, although it was a pretty convincing victory for Josh, and is certainly the player that I voted for. So a really good you know, really good performance from him over the month, and absolutely well-deserved. So hopefully he's not a player that we're sort of considering leaving the club, but let's talk about the players that aren't maybe moving towards the exit door in January. There's not been any major names linked as of yet with incomings. So the outgoings, obviously, let's get it out of the way then, is Michael Elise. The release clause question will not be answered really until he leaves, I guess, because there's talk of it being 8 million, more than 8 million. I wouldn't worry about that at the moment. Really, from the club's point of view, if it's true, then it makes life easy, because that's their negotiating strategy done. From, you know, if a team wants to come and buy him, then it makes it easy if they can fill it, and at least wants to go, then that'll, you know, that'll kind of be that. But at the moment, all it is for Reading's point of view is that various clubs, obviously Premier League sort of level clubs, are being linked with him. There's nothing more we know of that at the moment. Seeing when it comes to a lease, I guess it might be a bit of an uneasy month for Reading fans, but do you think it's kind of more likely that this situation comes to a head in January, or do you think we're actually going to be waiting till the summer for anything big to actually happen with him?
I think it's more likely to be the summer, to be honest. I know we've got the talk about the release clause at the minute. I know there's a very real danger that this ages really poorly, and I look really silly kind of as soon as he goes for 8 million in a couple of days, but I'm not really buying the release clause, to be honest. The idea that we've kind of put in an 8 million clause and he's played really well in the first half of the season, and as of kind of quarter to nine on Monday, a few days into the transfer window, there's been no talk of it being triggered. It seems a lot to me like someone has essentially been briefing the media that there is a release clause to try and drum up interest in some way. That might just be me kind of wishful thinking, but it doesn't quite sit right to me. It seems more like someone is trying to edge away for at least to leave the club or to get better terms for a contract at Reading or anything like that. But assuming there isn't a release clause, it makes a lot more sense for Reading to do business in the summer when obviously there's more clarity from our point of view. We'll know what division we're in, and maybe if we're in the Premier League, we can give him a new contract. He's happy to stay and he's happy to play regularly in the Premier League for a club that he knows inside out and he's happy to stay at. But if it does come to selling him from a Championship perspective, we're still able to hopefully start a bit of a bidding war. I know it's only going to be 1 year left on his contract, but you can still get big European clubs going up against each other to start a bidding war, hopefully. And if it's kind of 20, 30 million, that's kind of money that really makes a massive difference to our finances, makes a big benefit for us in terms of financial fair play. And hopefully if we kind of get to that stage where he's had a really good season and he's done as well for us as he possibly can, we can really maximise that value and do it in the summer.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't think that if Reading are in total control of his fate, they'll even entertain bids in January, because at the end of the day, if someone offers us, unless it's 50 million quid, aka the minimum amount you get for promotion, then it's not worth it. So unless the only way that he'll leave in this month is if he kicks up a proper stink, which I don't see happening, or if, you know, this release clause talk is true. And Reading, I suppose the beauty of the release clause Reading is obviously a lease on his agents if they want to tout it around or know about it. I'm not saying they are, but if Reading are the only people that know about it, they don't have to tell anyone. They don't have to, if, you know, Crystal Palace put in a £10 million bid, they don't have to legally turn around and say, oh, you're only £2 million off. They can just wait until someone hits it. So I suppose, you know, generally speaking, it's something that I do agree with Sim. It's not something I see being resolved this month. His contract situation means that, let's face it, if we don't go up in the summer, he's not going to stay. And Ben, I suppose that, you know, if we do get to that point, Reading fans are going to have to probably be quite realistic and say that we've, you know, if we don't go up, but we've had our fill of Michael Elise and, you know, he's a homegrown player, goes off for X million pounds, sell on clause, whatever. That's just the reality of being a Championship club, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about a couple of years ago when you know, Sigurdsson left, and I just thought, we're never going to get another player like him, you know. And then, you know, Elise, although not quite hitting the heights of Sigurdsson just yet in terms of numbers and consistency, he's along those lines of kind of star quality, and people are talking about him. So, you know, we are capable, clearly, of kind of producing these players and then selling them on. And that's as you said, that's part and parcel of where we're at. I think for me, my kind of, I suppose, sometimes naive and blind love for John Swift means that if Elise does go this window, for me, that's all right, because we get some money out of it. You know, we get a bit of kind of fakes in the media, but John Swift plays and that's it, you know. So I'd be more concerned if kind of, you know, Omar Richards went early, because we haven't got any other left backs. And he's probably been more consistent and kind of more pivotal to what we're trying to do as a club moving forward. So, you know, there are areas that I just wouldn't want to lose players in. Elise is kind of at the moment a luxury player that does do fantastically well for us and has done superbly this season. But, you know, we have got other players to kind of fill that position if needs be. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. I think from his personal point of view, with all due respect to those clubs that have been touted, you know, why would you move to Palace, who are, you know, realistically going to be in a relegation battle? You know, I know West Brom have been mentioned, you know, Leeds as well. So these are not clubs that are really pushing for Europe and the top end of the Premier League. So, you know, he would have to consider that from a personal point of view in terms of what he wants out of it. But, you know, the sensible thing from everyone's point of view is, as Sim said, and I know he said before, and I've agreed with him, is that really the business needs to be done in the summer so everyone can restock and think about, you know, what they need to do from a personal point of view, but also from an organisational point of view in Reading Football Club.
Yeah, but it's a good point, really, is that ultimately you look at Wilfred Zaha, is that if you do play for Crystal Palace, obviously, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to be playing for Crystal Palace. It's a very good club to be making a living. It's a good place to be in, and they are a good football team. But if you're Lise and you're thinking, okay, I want to be, you know, an England or a France international, and maybe he truly believes he's a player who can play the Champions League, you can, if you do get to that level of being at a, you know, mid-level Premier League club, you can get trapped there effectively. And that's maybe not what Lise wants to do at the moment. Obviously, it's going to be really, really hard for him to go from Reading to Man City or Reading to Chelsea. But perhaps it does make him think a little bit, and, you know, rightly so. It would make you think a little bit longer as to, do I want to, you know, persevere and maybe try and get promoted with Reading, have a season with the Premier League with them, go to a club and earn 100 grand a week and I'm playing the Champions League or Europa League, or do I want to move now and earn 50 grand a week and never play in those things? So it is difficult when you get to this sort of scenario. It's not quite as easy as perhaps maybe sometimes you make out with just going to the Premier League. There's a lot of leagues within the league, as it were. However, if you're Omar Richards, as the news has broken while we're doing this podcast, and Bayern Munich come knocking, and I mean, oh Jesus, this is probably not the news that we wanted, really, is it? Is that Bayern Munich, according to the Daily Telegraph, this is, I would describe this as a pretty reputable source when it, you know, all things considered for transfer gossip, comes and says that Bayern Munich have made an approach for Omar Richards and have informed the club that they wish to speak to him. They have every right to do that because they can pre-agree a deal for his contract expiring in the summer. Bayern have previous in this. A lot of Bundesliga clubs have previous in coming and getting young talent. Richards is 22. He's not a 16-year-old who, you know, they can turn into Alphonso Davies over the next 5 years. He, you know, is quite an old player for someone like Bayern to be coming in and you know, have a long-term plan for. At that age, Bayern would probably want someone better than Omar Richards, you'd think. But if they rate him and all that, and, you know, this is via an insider at the Madstad who is reportedly saying that the club are kind of feeling a bit sorry for themselves for not dealing with this contract situation a bit sooner. Sim, I'd agree with that. It'd be really brilliant if we had sorted out Richards' contract situation sooner. But here we are, and I mean, Bayern Munich, what can we do to stop that?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, to look at it from a more positive perspective, it's a huge kind of endorsement of how well Richards has done this season and how good the academy is, that you get players linked with Bayern Munich, and whether it's true or not, whether it comes off or not, to have him kind of named in that kind of story and in that kind of context is really good for Richards. Obviously, I really hope that he's gonna stick around, but it does show how good the academy is and how well he's done. But I guess just as another point, going back to kind of his general contract situation, if you'd asked Reading fans honestly in the summer, would they have wanted Omar Richards to get a new contract? They probably would have said, give him a couple of months, see how well he does in the first team, and then talk about it. It's not as if he was kind of really obviously a star player and really going to very obviously do this well this season, kind of before this season actually started. So yes, it is frustrating. Reading should have kind of got ahead of the curve with it, but it wasn't kind of that obvious externally that he was going to do this well and that he had to get a new contract.
Yeah, hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it? And I suppose at the end of the day, as you say, if Omar Richards gets a contract offer from Bayern and he goes off and plays for them at the end of the season, there isn't really too much Reading can do about that. And it's a sign that they've got a pretty decent academy if that happens. And then, you know, in an ideal world, Ethan Bristow then steps in as the next left back, or Imani Samuels then steps in as the next left back. So, you know, maybe that's how things can work and Reading can operate down that sort of level, but it's going to be difficult. And I suppose this maybe marks the uncertainty of the month ahead, is that players of this level who aren't 100% tied down to Reading get linked to these sort of clubs, and that's what Reading fans are going to have to deal with. For the time being, that's the problem of success, I suppose. Ask any Norwich fan. We'll round you off to finish off news bites. I'll round you off for what the other teams have been doing. Obviously, a lot of winter breaks going on at the moment. The women's team are back in action on the 10th against Chelsea at the Mad Stad. They're currently sixth in the WSL. Under-23s have Norwich at home on the 15th. They're bottom of the 13-team PL2, but they're only 3 points off fourth. So you get an idea of that being a bit of a quagmire. Under-18s host West Brom on the 23rd. They're 11th of their 13-team PL South at the moment. So let's round off the show then with a bit of big match preview.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
So the FA Cup is coming back around, and it kind of feels like the least excited we've ever been for the FA Cup, to be brutally honest with you. It's not necessarily just because the whole scenario and the lack of fans and everything, but Luton, you know, the team that knocked us out of the League Cup, it's an away day that fans probably would like to have been on at some point, but they certainly won't have been on it. Or, you know, we were looking at three trips to Luton in a row of it being a new ground to go to, which fans haven't been able to go to. So 3 p.m. on Saturday, live on the FA Player. We think it's going to, there's the BBC, basically everything is being shown live somewhere. So we kind of understand this will be on the FA Player or the BBC website. So we'll let you know that as the whole thing gets announced in the lead up to the game. Is it in doubt? That's kind of the only other real question mark over this. The Luton had the QPR game postponed because of reported COVID cases, bit of an outbreak supposedly in the Luton camp. And the PA are reporting that all teams will be tested 72 hours before the game. Only, you know, only then will we get an idea as to whether this outbreak has been sorted out. Any teams that cannot play or any games that are postponed on the FA Cup weekend must apply to the FA for basically what's going on next. So it's not the most reassuring of things, but supposedly that's kind of what's going on. There is a midweek immediately after the third round that could be theoretically utilised if, you know, need be for a game being rescheduled. But other than that, there isn't any time until the fourth round. So God knows what's going to happen. Hopefully, you know, Reading are going to be playing a game on Saturday. But Sim, we go to Luton, really, I suppose the FA Cup is a little bit of a nuisance this year, as much as it can be. And in that sense, we're kind of obliged to think that we'll be changing around lots of players and just giving it a bit of a go with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess it's a useful opportunity to get game time for some players. I mean, obviously, you want to kind of primarily give it to younger players who aren't going to be needed in the league as much. People like Southwood, annoyingly not needed in the league as much, but Bristow getting a start at left back, but also Puskas as well coming back in. And I think Paolo said after the game on Saturday that he wanted to give Puskas some game time after he unexpectedly came back from injury for that game, and he didn't get it. Obviously, it was Baldock instead, but there are going to be a few players like that, Puskas, I guess maybe Swift as well, that you can give them game time to. And when you've got a clear week before then of a bit of recuperation and training and prep, and then a clear week after that again until the, I think it's the Brentford game the week after, it does give us an opportunity to just give a bit of game time to players who are going to need it and going to need that bit of sharpness to really kind of get up to speed in the run up to a busy run of games. And if we can get Puskas up to speed and kind of get him taking the load off Jao a little bit, hopefully it kind of reduces the chance of Jao being injured at some point from a muscle injury further on in the season.
Ben, are there any names in particular you're sort of hoping to see? I mentioned Ethan Bristow a minute ago. He'd probably be the one that I'd like to put in a left back. Goalkeeper Southwood, anyone else you'd probably throw in?
I'd like to see Ryan East play, purely because I think he was kind of down and out again at the start of the season in terms of potentially being moved on, and he's kind of worked his way back in through, you know, hard work, but also injuries as well to the squad. I think he deserves to start. You could say maybe, you know, Gerald Dorsett potentially. But beyond that, I mean, it would be nice to win the game and just keep that kind of mentality going from those players playing. What you put around them, not sure really. I mean, I don't have any particular leanings towards the rest of them. I think Puskas, as Sim said, would be good to come in and just to kind of, even if he gets 60 minutes or whatever. But yeah, you look, it's a winnable game. It's if it goes ahead, it's something that I wasn't massively disappointed with in terms of the, you know, the draw. Obviously, if we were allowed to go to games, you always want home games in the cup because it's another game that you can go to and experience. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how some of the bigger clubs approach the cup this year with kind of no fans in the stadium and the Premier League being a little bit closer than it has been in previous years. So, you know, if we get kind of bigger fish down the line, as it were, then it would be interesting to see the kind of the makeup of the team. But for now, I've got to focus on beating Luton and hopefully kind of playing some younger players that you know, in my opinion, deserve to have a bit of a game, really.
Yeah, Nelson Abbey, another one, a centre-back who signed his first pro deal in the last few weeks, another name that might be thrown into the mix if Veljko Paunović feels the need to. It's always difficult to judge a new manager's perspective on the cups. Obviously, you know, there's the cliche of him not being English and therefore taking it less seriously. It might be completely the opposite. So we'll see what Paunović wants to do. As I said, that theoretically there is a week free after the Luton game. So it is a chance to either give the players a really extended break off. And even if they do play, they still will have a week either side to, you know, to sort of get rested from that Christmas period. Let's talk about predictions then. The prediction league over the last few weeks, Ollie was the only person to take a perfect score with a 2-1 win versus Luton. I was also in for a win on that game. Sim picked up the only draw versus Swansea, and Handbags, Ollie and Sim got wins versus Huddersfield. So the standings as things are, myself and Handbags on 16, Westy 14, Ollie 13, Sim, you on 12. As a bit of fun then, won't count towards the table, but let's throw out some predictions for the Luton game. Sim, what are you going to say?
It's a little bit tricky to work it out without knowing the team or even kind of what kind of team Paolo is going to want to put out. But I've got a feeling that we're not really going to take it fully seriously. We're not going to be kind of desperate to get a result in it. And it's going to be more about squad management than actually trying to go out and win the game. And obviously, if Reading do lose it, then that's at least one more game further down the line that we're not going to have to worry about in terms of fixtures. And from that perspective, I think we're going to not do particularly well. And I can see Luton winning it. Let's go with 2-1.
Ben, what do you think for this one?
I think my current mindset, I've always got to back the team now, really, in terms of where we're at and you know, where we've been. So I'm going to go 1-0 Reading. I think we'll probably have just enough. But I, again, sound like a broken record, I agree with Sim. I think Luton will probably take this a little bit more seriously than we are. You know, we might go down the kind of the Steve Coppell ethos of just not throwing the game, but, you know, not taking it as seriously as maybe fans would like us to. And that was always the one criticism that fans had of him and cup games. So I think we, you know, again, it is very difficult to do it without knowing the team, but I'm just going to go 1-0 Reading, play it safe.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I think I'm probably going to go 1-0 Luton myself, just because the tantalising prospect of being knocked out by the divisional rival twice in the same season is perhaps too much to ignore, and is a bit of a dramatic way, or completely the opposite of dramatic way, of falling out of the two cups. But I suppose this year, you know, I suppose at the end of the day, with the promotion being on the table and the cups being, you know, or certainly the fans being the way things are, perhaps the cups have their least importance at the moment, and Yeah, I think they've kind of been shoehorned in a little bit as they are. So then in taking themselves out of it, it will probably be the least we've cried over a cup exit for some time. And with that in mind, we will be back after that Luton game to review it. And if it goes ahead, which we hope it does, either way, we'll have a show for you next week. And thank you very much for everyone joining us this week. After a couple of weeks off, we always like to take a break over the winter to kind of reassess, see where things are going, and I think we can agree that everything's going all right. So that's nice and good. And thank you, Sim, for popping on this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
And Ben as well. Thanks very much, mate.
Absolute pleasure. No problem at all.
And the pressure cooker of the playoffs can take a back seat after Reading take another 3 points on the road. It's a very pretty position to be sat in for the Royals right now. We can go to Luton looking for just a little bit of cup magic. Who knows what we might find? We'll join you after that game at Kenilworth Road next week. Until then, come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs are